Hello and welcome to the Impact Lockdown Pay-Per-View Reaction Quincast. I'm Christy Rios and I'm here with Seth Knupp and Jason Allen of Quinn Media. You can find all of us on Twitter with Jason at isbeingthatguy, Seth at fearlessfandom, and you can find me at the Quinn B. So what did you guys think of tonight's show?
I thought it was okay. Not great, not terrible. I was kind of happy in the end because aside from Magnus, the way he kept the belt and keeping the belt, that was the only one where I was a little off. But everything else played out exactly how I thought it would. Everyone kind of, there was one pretty exciting addition to the show that I don't think anybody saw coming. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, so I enjoyed it. Jason?
I thought it was pretty good. I honestly think last year's Lockdown was better. But I really liked the Team MVP versus Team Dixie match at the end with all the weapons and closing down the cage. And then obviously Willow making his appearance. Yeah, there were some matches in there that were just kind of meh. And the whole Abyss thing coming through the bottom of the ring there was kind of interesting.
So you brought it up. So I'm comfortable starting with the end just because it was the longest match and they built up the most to it. First of all, I'm going to admit ignorance here and just go ahead and say I had never seen them do a match that way where they counted down to people coming in. Have they done that before? Is that a normal way to run that match?
Yeah, they've done that before in the past, and it kind of reminds you of like the Royal Rumbles.
Where exactly. That's
like
why
2 minutes and then they come in. So
yeah, that's where I developed a little bit of a problem with it. It felt like they were, I mean, the WWE just came off of the Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber, and in both matches they do the countdown till another guy gets in kind of thing. So it felt a little bit, you know, like they were trying to ride that wave. Like I said, I've never seen them do that before, so maybe I've just never seen a Lethal Lockdown. I don't know. So the Willow coming back. So we talked about in the preview show about how I thought it was kind of strange that they had mentioned that it was going to be Jeff Hardy, and then it can't be Jeff Hardy, but then it's Willow, and Taz was talking about his tattoos and everything, and they kept making inside, you know, little snarky comments about the fact that it was Jeff. So obviously they're not going to do anything to even attempt to hide that it is Jeff. They're even going to make jokes about the fact that they know it is. I find that strange. Anyone else?
Well, I don't see how you could hide that it's Jeff, because he's wearing the whole cut up nylons on his arms.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know the hair, and you see his tattoos. So
yeah, the tattoos were the dead giveaway. But they were making, like you said, they were making remarks too, because at one point they kept calling him like charismatic, and they were like, he's such an enigma. I'm like, Jesus, please.
So they're just gonna kind of make it a joke, you know, to let everybody know that they know that you know that it is, but they're not going to come out and say it. They're going to let Jeff play the character, I guess, at least for a while. Dude, him jumping off the top of the cage to get in and then running over to the camera and doing the cackle was pretty badass, though.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Or scary, however you want to spin it.
The rest of the match was kind of a clusterfuck. I got to admit, I made a comment. As soon as it happened, I thought it was weird timing that they put the top down and everything else, and then they play Dixie's music, and she has to come out, and it's just, she's so annoying.
Well,
I'm kind of excited to see how they play up the storyline, because we know that, you know, Team MVP ends up winning. But the Bully Ray thing, you know, inserting him as a guest referee, that
10 minutes after the match started.
Well, like, yeah, no, yeah, you're right, because it did start when the first two guys were in, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, well, you're absolutely, well, yeah, technically,
you,
right?
You can't, every man had to be in there before you could actually win the match. That's why they brought in the ref later on. But it was
so there's
pretty
no
obvious
need for,
when
yeah.
She said, my New York insurance policy. Well, who comes out and says he's from Hell's Kitchen, New York all the time?
Right, that's true.
Bully Ray, so.
Yeah, well, and I gotta admit, I was so happy when it was him because I knew that he was going to turn and win the match for MVP. There was no way he was going to, like, align with Dixie. That didn't make much sense. So I knew he was going to turn, and that made me happy right off the bat that they chose him. The stare down with MVP at the end, though, you know, there are those moments in wrestling where sometimes you're just thinking, God, what are these guys thinking? Like, this looks really horrible on TV. And so many people watching it are just thinking, well, they look like they're totally just about to make out. And that was definitely one of those moments. Like, I don't know if it was the camera angle or what it was, but those two were just, they were in a weird position during that stare down, and it made me uncomfortable. But anyway, so team MVP gets the win. And so now, like I said, I'm interested to see how the storyline plays out, like with Dixie and how she's supposed to lose control now. Does she leave TV?
God, one could hope.
I don't think she's going anywhere.
No, I don't. I don't think she is either, man. I'm with you.
I want to rewind a little bit. You said about those two guys being so close to each other being awkward.
Yeah.
The most awkward thing I saw all night was with Austin Aries and MVP, where Austin Aries was locked like in between MVP's legs. And his head was turned the wrong way, so Aries' face was right up MVP's ass.
That was when they were were they the only two guys in the ring at the time? Like, it was right at the beginning, right? Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Aries quickly moved, like, oh my god.
I know MVP had already told the internet that he was going to pander to the crowd with the Miami gear and everything, but I was still, it still didn't play well with me personally. I like where the character is as far as, you know, moving the company forward and everything. I think that's a really good angle. But then, you know, being better for business or whatever, right, you're going to steal that tagline too, I'm sure. So the match before that was what I thought would have been the main event because it was for the title. I know that this match had a whole different thing going on. But with the way it ended, I still think it should have been at the end because you have a guy come out of the ring. And, you know, if you're going to have that happen, it's kind of logical to have it happen at the very end.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the crew did a good enough job putting the mats down or whatever they would do to rebuild, you know, laying a fresh canvas or whatever to make sure it worked. But so Samoa Joe, Magnus, Jason, what do you got?
Well, I think it, you know, is a great match between those guys beating the hell out of each other. A little bit of blood during the match.
For both Joe, of them.
Yeah, Joe's really dried up very fast. But, yeah, they both had some blood. And I just keep coming back to, you know, Abyss's arm just out of nowhere coming through the ring, which was just so awkward because I was, like, watching it and I thought I was seeing things.
Because it I'm went like, really
what
slowly.
What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it came up really slowly, and then you could see the tattoos, so if you've been following him, you know it's him. But what I... Why is Abyss helping Magnus? Somebody answer that question.
I don't know. I don't remember anything with the last few weeks of Abyss being involved with Magnus at all.
He's been gone since EY took his mask off.
Yeah, he has.
So... Chrissy, you got an explanation?
It doesn't make any sense to me, but then again, that's kind of TNA. It doesn't make any sense.
Is that their tagline? That's the business tagline? Watch it us. We don't make sense. So Abyss destroys Joe with Janice. That's the name, right? Janice?
Yeah, Janice. Yeah, and it hits him with the black hole slam, and then the crowd really... doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that was and that's why I think that we're kind of dead on with our interpretation of this as being something that makes absolutely no sense, because the live crowd didn't react at all, like in any way, shape, or form. And since we're talking about the crowd, I guess now is as good a time as any. Did either one of you see the pictures that were coming out from people that were in the crowd?
Yeah, I just, before we started this, I saw a picture where, you know, one whole side of the ring was no one there on the second tier.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look, it sounded, you know, there wasn't much sound coming out from the crowd throughout the whole show anyway. So you could just kind of tell where they didn't sell a lot of tickets.
there was a few moments where some good sound came out, in my opinion, that they were behind some people. But the Abyss thing, the crowd just was dead. Nobody knew why he was there or how he played into the match. It made no sense whatsoever. It killed the crowd. Everyone thought Joe was going to win. Mm-hmm. And it made sense to have Joe win right there. It made no sense. And then they posed down with each other, Magnus and Abyss, at the top of the ramp.
Yeah.
And I still, for the life of me, couldn't figure out what the hell Abyss was doing helping Magnus. Like, why are these two together? So that left me scratching my head quite a bit.
And they also showed when the match ended, like, as it ended, groups of people just started getting up and walking away. I was like, this is not what you want your camera angle on, folks. Switch the angle. Like, just awful.
Awful. Just awful. Well, I think we should just continue rolling up the card. And next is James Storm's new super heel character coming out with the black trench coat and the goatee and the pants. That was another not drinking beer with anybody. Just looking real, real surly.
Yeah, I noticed that he was wearing pants. I haven't seen that in forever. So, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, and no beer.
Yeah, no beer.
Because
heels don't drink with the crowd, Jason.
I guess not.
But
one thing I find hilarious with Gunner's whole intensity thing is that multiple times he was slamming his own face into the turnbuckle and slapping himself. And at one point, I saw him slamming his head into the ring mat.
Oh, God.
That's how you Hulk up, brother.
I guess. But I was just like, all right, man, we understand you're slapping yourself to get, you know, into it, but you don't have to keep headbutting everything you see.
Now, you should have headbutted the cage a couple times. Get some dried up blood flowing.
Well, they smashed each other's faces in there a few times.
They really did. That, you know, in all seriousness, that match actually, I felt at least, had a pretty high intensity level. And
yeah, it did.
And they really pummeled each other. I sent out a slobber knocker on that one because it really did. You know, those guys are both pretty big dudes, and they did. They put on a good, solid cage match that you expect. And I know it was a last man standing, so it's got to be brutal, but with no weapons involved, just being in a cage, they made a technical match plus a punching match and just a big brutal match into something that I felt was worth watching. So,
well, there was a steel chair.
There was two of them, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was two of them. Yeah. And at the beginning of the match, Storm took out the tag rope off the corner, which I don't understand why they kept those on there since there's a cage.
What a cheater.
So he ripped off the tag rope and was choking him with it earlier on.
What a heel that James Storm is.
Oh, man.
So he lost spectacularly. And it was, I think, beautiful.
The most brutal part for me was when Gunner was going off his, you know, off the top rope, head drop, and James Storm threw the chair right in his face as he was coming down. I was like, oh my God.
I love whenever they do the throwing of things. Like, even when they throw the stairs, whenever they use the ring steps in matches, and they throw them. Because that added momentum, man, it's unpredictable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's very unpredictable. And I need to apologize because I skipped over, since we are working backwards, I skipped over the Madison Rain Gail Kim match. I did want to compliment both of them because I know that they're both avid listeners. It was a good match. I didn't give Madison Rain any credit going into the match on our preview show, despite the fact that I said I loved her, which I do. But, you know, they didn't make it... Like, it was still about the cage. Both of them climbed the cage multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
They did pretty high spots off the turnbuckles, off the cage. I don't know what that move was that Gail Kim did that they did as a high spot. It looked almost RKO-ish, you know. It was one of those neck crank jump things that they do. And she, like, Madison, that could have messed her neck up pretty bad. It was a pretty high spot for the women. So I was impressed, and it ended the way I wanted it to. Madison won. She kicked out a couple times where she could have gotten a three count, and I enjoyed it. And so now I feel bad for skipping it over, and that's my take on the Madison Rain-Gail Kim match.
I thought it was a good match because, you know, obviously, with, you know, Gail Kim always gives a good match, and the Killer Queen, Madison Rain, also usually gives a pretty good match and kept her belt. I wanted to bring up Taz saying that Madison Rain has thunder thighs, and I'm like, well, that's not offensive. If that's not offensive,
seriously though, just quickly, there was a lot of talk about thighs of wrestlers on the show tonight.
Samoa Joe,
he was all over those thighs.
He did bring up thighs quite
big,
a bit.
Thick thighs, big thick thighs.
He did give. Maybe he was trying to cover up for the fact that, you know, Madison's going to hear that, and that's going to come back that he said she had thunder thighs, because that's a pretty, that's not very nice, Taz. That's that, you get a slap on the hand for that one. Yes, but she did do that move. What she was doing was pretty awesome. She was banging freaking Gail Kim's head into the cage with her legs. Yep. I was impressed.
Yeah, she tried to do that on the mat, and then she got out of it earlier on.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that match was good. I give it a thumbs up. All right, who wants to talk about EC3's promo skills? No one. All right.
EC3, you know, and he kind of just comes across as a little whiny, I think, more than anything else for me.
Yeah, I agree. I did like, I'm gonna talk about his promo skills then. When the crowd was doing the "You Can't Wrestle" chant, and he was giving it back to him, and he's like, "Actually, I'm pretty good." Like, I thought that was awesome. He played off the crowd perfectly, and you know, no one really had the opportunity to the rest of the night, other than Dixie, who, she, for being half of a crowd at best, they really gave it to her when she came out to start the show.
She was bad. I wrote to her, I'm like, Dixie, no one cares, you know. She was trying to, you know, make all these derogatory comments towards Florida, the University of Miami.
LeBron James plays with a little ball.
James. And I'm like, no one was even really paying attention to her. It was pretty obvious. Everyone's like, whatever, let's start the matches because we don't want to hear you just sit there and ramble all night.
All right. So back to EC3. I thought he did a good job. I love open challenges, because they always, you know, they tend to lead to something interesting, or at least they should if they're done right, if they're booked right. And this was probably the best spot of the entire night, in my opinion, having Bobby Lashley answer the call. And I mean, getting to bring him back is huge for TNA. I mean, I don't know how popular he is anymore or anything like that, but he's a name, and he's a destroyer. I mean, that dude is jacked.
Yeah, he is.
He got in there next to EC3, and I give EC3 a lot of credit. That dude's a pretty, I mean, I'm not going to say big, because I'm sure he's like 5'6", but, you know, he's a ripped up dude, and Lashley gets in there and just like dwarfs him.
Yeah, he towered over him.
Oh my God. That was awesome. So that was intense. I enjoyed that.
And I like when Lashley came out there and people are going crazy, and EC3 looked like he crapped in his panties there, but
Dixie's panties
with sequins. But they didn't really fight, you know. He just kind of beat the hell out of him for like 30 seconds, and then EC3 yelling, "You're not on the roster, you're not on the roster," and it was just
Did you see, he sent out, like, it was you know, enough time for him to get backstage and everything else. But he sent out a tweet after that tweet that just said "not on the roster" over and over.
Like a dozen times. Yeah.
That was well done. That guy, he's doing a good job. If you want to give credit to guys who get like shitty gimmicks, or, you know, need to make something out of nothing, he's doing a good job of being exactly who he's supposed to be.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'll give him that. All right, so, and I had that, well, that wasn't a match. I was going to say I had that one right, but it's kind of hard to have it right when Kurt wasn't able to perform tonight. So that really didn't, you know, that really wasn't that match.
I think you skipped over Manic and Tigre Uno.
No, I think that was before, right? Did I skip again? Oh man, yeah, I'm all over the place.
Did it again.
Well, I apologize to Manic and you know, La Tigre or El Tigre or whatever, Uno.
That guy, just that yeah. dude.
And you know what? I got that one right, so I was gonna say that I got it right because I knew that they were gonna put over their guests, as it were, and they did in the first match with the guys from Japan One or Wrestle One. And they put them over, and then they put over Uno as well, over Manic. That match was pretty intense. Those guys, they put on pretty much the only high spots of the entire night consistently for a match. So,
well, I didn't, you know, I know Uno just came in and they're putting him on lockdown, but Manic hasn't been on forever, aka Suicide in the past.
Yeah,
and then they just, you know, they threw that match in there. I'm just kind of like, okay, you know, kind of nice seeing a little high flying, but this, there's no build up to the match. It's just there.
Right. And you know, it's hard to get excited for a match when, like you said, there was no build, but at the same time, those guys have enough juice as far as putting on a show goes that they're not really trying to tell his story as much as they're trying to do those high flying spots. So when it comes to those guys, I excuse it just a little bit, you know, but I agree with you. It's still hard to get into it.
I like at the end, they called it the Sabretooth Splash. And it sealed it for Uno.
The Sabretooth Splash. Well done. All right. So I apologize to those guys for skipping that match. I was just so excited to get up to the Samuel Shaw, you know, threatening to kill himself before the match.
It's not high enough. Can't you see?
Oh my gosh, that was so ridiculous.
And Anderson, Anderson had to, so this guy's threatening to kill himself and Anderson has to be like, hold on just a second. Just so he can get in his own announcement, like his own.
Yeah.
And then he's like, okay, now back to this. It's just like, oh, that is awesome. Like, dude, Ken Anderson is the shit. Anybody who would tell a guy to hang on, don't jump yet. Let me introduce myself first, and then you can, you know, now you commit suicide. That's okay.
It's not high enough. What are you thinking?
That was hysterical. Oh, I was
really,
tired.
It really was. It was. It was very funny. The match kind of drug, and it was weird because at that point, there were CM Punk chants.
Yes, that, there was.
And
that was crazy.
And I'm okay. So not to get too much draw over, I won't talk about this very long. But as anyone who listens to any of our other podcasts knows, it's been hard to avoid CM Punk talk like every week for a month and a half. So the fact that it bleeds over into a TNA pay-per-view is pretty crazy, in my opinion. I would have never seen that coming. I understand they're a wrestling crowd and everything, but at the same time, it made me feel kind of shitty because they have no reason to cheer for CM Punk at that particular event. Like,
no, since he wrestled there a long time ago.
A long time ago. And I know that Dixie, like, sent out a tweet or whatever when he first left the WWE saying that the door was open. And I think somebody else, maybe it was Bully Ray or somebody, made a comment they were going to talk to him right away about coming over. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but
I don't either.
But that point aside, you know, Sam Shaw, we talked about it on the last TNA podcast. He's been doing awesome work.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, when you have him and then Anderson, who's really doing great work right now too, and then you're cheering for a guy who has nothing to do with the show just because it's become kind of a thing to do at wrestling matches. Like, as a huge CM Punk fan, as a huge fan of the whole Hijack Raw movement for Chicago, I still thought it was kind of tasteless and shitty by whoever was there in attendance to cheer for CM Punk. And that's my opinion. And it's not the bottom line because I am not stone cold.
Anyway, I think earlier in the night with EC3, he did yell out, "You're not hijacking this show."
Yeah,
he did.
He did it. That was after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. That was after. Anyway, that match was good, and then
I hope Sam Shaw is washing those clothes.
I don't think he is.
He's been wearing the same ones.
God, I was going to comment to you on that. Where, I don't think he is, because he's maintaining the Christie scent that way.
And he wears the Henley, like, in the ring for the match, too. Like, he just comes out in the shirt and jeans. Like, he doesn't, like, there's no ring gear, which just continues to add to the creepiness of this character.
You know, this is kind of weird, but I was hoping he would actually bring out the wig with him up to the top of the cage and just sit there and sniff at being when he said, Christie Hemme is not professional.
Oh, my she wasn't God. On time. It's like bringing out head.
Yes.
A new Something version. He just pulls it out of his pocket really slow and sniffs it as it goes along.
As long as it's out of his pocket, not like actually out of his pants. Yeah, no, but that match was solid. Everything about it was like that was the most storytelling that was done in the entire night, in my opinion, as far as the match went. Like, they built it, you know, Anderson should have won and Hebner got knocked down, and like they went through an entire a real storytelling match. Which I really, really liked. And then when Christie got dragged into the ring or into the cage or whatever, through the camera hole, you know, there was a point during the Gail Kim, Madison Rain match that I thought Tapa was going to like grab one of them through that hole. And all I could think was, you know, this hole is a problem. Maybe you want to fix that.
It's a pretty big hole.
It is really.
It's a pretty big plot hole. Why is there this giant hole in the side? It's the hole for the camera. No, it doesn't need to be that big. It shouldn't be bigger than a, you know, what an arm would be or something like that around. But anyway.
Body is it? Turns out to be.
Yeah, you know, enough room for Christie Hemme to get her leg ripped open on the fencing as she's being pulled through. So then that was pretty much that was the second match, and the first match was the six man tag, you know, with Bad Influence and Chris Sabin and the guys from Wrestle One. It was a good match. You know, it had everything you want to see. I'm always impressed with Kazarian and Daniels. Those guys, you know, they're professional wrestlers. I give them a lot of credit.
They're a great tag team. They work well together.
They really do. And Chris Sabin, you know, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, and they all looked good. They all looked good. I saw a comment about how the great Muta, you know, he wrestled without his shirt off or without his shirt on, but Joe refuses to. It is kind of sad because that guy's like 110 or something like that. But no, I mean, all right. So there's your matches. Like I said, I got them all right. I don't know how everybody else did, but I
got one right.
You got one right. All right, that's all you need. Hey.
I got a few right.
Here's my final take. It was a good show. It did well, and they had some high spots, but the parts that sucked so bad that it's really all you're going to be able to think about. I can tell you right now, it's all I'm going to be able to think about. All I'm going to take from this show is that Abyss.
The Abyss arm.
Yeah, just Abyss randomly coming out of the bottom of the, you know, from underneath the ring.
Yeah.
And I say randomly, and I feel like that's actually giving it credit. Because it was just so beyond any stretch of logic that he would come out and hurt Joe and help Magnus. Maybe over the next couple of days, someone can explain to me at what point he developed an issue with Samoa Joe.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, even past that, how did he team up with Magnus? It's just such a bad pairing. It makes no sense.
One of the two things had to have happened, right? But we don't know it, and maybe they'll explain it, or maybe it'll just be a thing. But at first it felt like it was about Joe. It wasn't about Magnus. And then at the end, it very clearly was his crush on Magnus. You know, they had to pose together at the end. I don't know, dude. I didn't enjoy it, and it almost, I can almost say that it ruined the entire show because it was just that ridiculous. And that's your championship match. Like, if you do that on the undercard match, you know, and it doesn't make sense, you're kind of like, meh, whatever. It doesn't make sense, but it's mid-card. That was your heavyweight championship match. And you just kind of throw it away. Like, the crowd was chanting bullshit. And, yep. And you just threw away your title match with a storyline that made absolutely no sense. So, congratulations, TNA. You did a good job.
Well, and after the match, they had a little, you know, thing with EY asking him, I thought you were going to get treatment. And then Magnus said, well, he got his treatment. He's with us or something like that. And so that there's probably going to be some explaining going on, you know, this week on Impact. But I don't know. And when he pulled, you know, Samoa Joe down under the ring and then Joe comes out of there like he beat the hell out of him and he ain't getting back up. But
that was
obviously he came up behind him.
I gotta throw a little love to Joe because when he came out of that hole and he just looked beat up and like he had just beat him up and he had that look of just pure anger on his face. I just wonder how much of that anger he had on his face was like, why the fuck are we doing this?
Well, not to take a little off subject, this reminds me of Step Brothers. And Will Ferrell buries John C. Reilly in the ground, and then he just rises up and it's like, zombie!
You're a zombie!
That's all I can think of.
All right, well, Jason, what's your final take on the show?
I thought, you know, I guess I would just say it was average. I thought Lockdown last year was better by far. I love the Sam Shaw stuff, especially at the beginning of the match. Ended kind of weird, but Rockstar Spud, where can I get a suit like that?
Right.
That was just ridiculous. And his, you know, super hair flip, almost like a tribute to Conan O'Brien. I don't know. But I don't know. I thought it was an okay show. I thought it would have been better considering, but I guess I'll just leave it at that. I thought it was, I guess I'd give it like a C plus, B minus. I didn't, you know, think it was that great, and I didn't think it was, you know, horrible either. So
fair enough. Chrissy?
It was all right. You know, it wasn't anything spectacular. I mean, the only thing, again, that, you know, we've already discussed stood out was the, you know, the whole, you know, up from the depths of the bottom of the mat comes Abyss. And that's really all that kind of stood out to me, too. And then the only other thing that I have to comment on is that they really, really have reproduced the Wyatts and TNA with Willow like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, right down to even turning off the lights and having him appear in the ring kind of just stood out to me as being just a bit too much copied. So I wish they'd get a little bit more original, but it's typical TNA.
Yeah, I agree with that. The promos were similar in the, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the Riddle, creepy, you know,
in the woods,
backwoods vibe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Backwoods vibe and everything. And then the lights going out, that's, I'll agree with you on that. So I'd say in the end, we all kind of feel like it was pretty average. And, if I were to give every single match on the card somewhere between a C plus and a B, and then the Joe thing turns it, you know, a D minus or an F with Abyss coming out, you know, it skews the average. And I think we're all kind of in that C range. So I think we're pretty comfortable given this show somewhere in that range of a average at best. So with that, Chrissy?
All right, let's close it up or lock it down. I want to say thanks to my co-hosts, Seth Knupp and Jason Allen. I'm Chrissy Rios. Make sure to head on over to Twitter and ask us any questions or share any comments on tonight's podcast by going to Quinn Media and using the hashtag QuinnCast. Finally, you can check out more by heading over to QuinnMedia.com for more podcast reviews and interviews. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.